Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Slowly but surely, Anchorage has grown a remarkable cycling community, including commuters, racers, winter bikers, and now inventors and manufacturers. Today we're learning about a couple of promising sprouts growing from that tree, programs started by leaders in the cycling world to help young people become fit, confident cyclists. In the first half of the show, Lael Wilcox, an amazing athlete of world caliber, will be talking about her adventure with middle school girls. In the second half, we'll learn about a new bike school which aims to teach bike repair skills and to turn underprivileged kids into bike racers. Well, my first guest today is somebody who was on the show previously, and I have to say, I think you're probably one of the listeners' favorite guests we've ever had.
Man.
Lael Wilcox told this amazing story about her cycling all over the world and winning the coast-to-coast bike race that goes from the West Coast to the East Coast, and such an amazing story. Go to our website, outdoorexplorer.org. We'll have a link, and you can listen to that interview because it will blow your mind, and people were really into it. And so now Lael's back in Anchorage, and she's doing a program for girls.
Yeah, so it's a middle school girls' bicycle mentorship program.
Called
Anchorage Grit.
Sort of giving back so that other kids can do kind of some of what you did.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing was designed to kind of empower the girls to be able to pack their gear onto their bikes and go for an overnight trip.
Yeah, and you're doing some pretty ambitious things with these girls.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, our capstone project was riding from town, Anchorage, out to Eklutna, and then riding out Eklutna Lake to the Serenity Falls Forest Service cabin.
Wow, and that's with middle schoolers.
Ride. Yep, 12 and 13-year-old girls.
And they never complained at all.
a little bit. You know, the hills are hard.
Yeah, really? That's a long ride. Maybe not for you. I mean, you like ride across continents, but for the rest of us.
But it reminded me how hard that was to get started.
Uh-huh.
But they got so much better. We did the program for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We met 2 to 3 times a week, and I saw them improve so much over the time. It was so cool.
Now, what made you decide to do this? Because you were sort of a world nomad, just riding from here to there to here to there, and then you get to a town and you sort of work as a waitress or whatever and make a little bit more money and then ride some more. Which sounds kind of like a dream come true. Why stop that and come back to town and do this?
Yeah. Actually, the idea came up over Christmas when I came home.
Mm-hmm.
I was home spending time with my friend Kate Rodriguez, and the year before, we had actually put on a program with my mom's class, Russian Jack Elementary, where we rounded up about 35 bikes and gave them to the kids, to kids that didn't have bikes.
Oh, nice.
So I asked Kate, do you want to do something like that again when we come home? Because she was going to travel with me in Mexico. And she was like, well, you know, I'd really like to do a program working with either high school or middle school girls. And so we just started thinking about it and then came up with this plan to do the mentorship. While we were riding in Mexico, we hashed out all the details, started sending emails back to Anchorage, trying to coordinate who could be a mentor, what schools we could work with.
And technology has changed a lot, hasn't it?
It's so incredible.
You're wandering around Mexico and you're able to
totally
coordinate. Yeah.
And I also bought this little Mexican cell phone so I could just start calling people. And so I'm, you know, sitting by the side of the road in the desert asking like, oh, can we store the bikes in the gym in Bagich Middle School? You know, stuff like that. It's like you're a world away, but you could just do that. So
that is amazing.
That's kind of how it came together.
So focusing on middle school girls makes tons of sense to me because I've raised two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge danger zone as a parent, in which I've learned myself and I've done a show actually on it, because at this age, a lot of girls give up on athletics and they decide it's not their self-image or they can't be the best, so they don't want to do it, or for whatever reason, they drop out. Is that part of the reason you focused on that age group?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a really cool age group when everything's kind of changing.
Mm-hmm.
You're really figuring out what you like. You're in a new school. You start making really your own decisions. But it's an age that I loved personally.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, you know, if I had been in middle school and I could have done this, I would have loved it. It's a time when the kids are just really motivated to take on big challenges and do big things. So I thought this is perfect.
Yeah.
So let's do that.
So how did you recruit the kids you were going to do work with?
We worked with the schools. So we asked the counselors and teachers from the schools to nominate students that they thought would be interested in the program. And then Kate was actually back from Mexico, and she held interest meetings at the schools with the girls, and then they all signed up to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how many?
So it was 5 girls from Bagich and 6 from Stellar.
Okay, so not too large of a group.
Yeah,
that's
so
manageable.
They just partnered up between the schools. The way it would kind of work, Bagich and Stellar are about 7 miles apart, and the schools get out at different times.
Okay.
So half of the mentors would meet at one school, the other half would meet at the other. The girls would ride towards each other until they met up, and then we would all go together as a group to an activity.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
So who were the mentors that you're talking about?
The mentors were Kate and I, and then a woman named Danielle Shockley. She was a social studies teacher at Bagich.
Mm-hmm.
Danielle Dalton was a counselor at Service. And then one of my good friends growing up, Tamara Cornfield, also was a mentor.
Yeah. From the Nordic Ski Club.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and then you just go out on activities. And what was your goal? Just sort of build fitness or to build skills, or what were you doing?
Mostly just to have them spend time on the bike, getting real places, kind of exploring Anchorage, and then along the way, learning small things that would enable them to do a trip. So we worked on safe riding. That was our first lesson. Second, we worked on some bicycle maintenance. They learned how to change flats and do some small things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We also had a bag making workshop over at Revelate Designs, where they actually traced and cut out panels for their own panniers.
And this must have taken a lot of planning.
Yeah,
to do
it did. But I had so much support. You know, I would just write to people, and Kate would write to people and ask, "Are you interested in helping us with this? This is kind of the idea we have."
Mm-hmm.
Everybody said yes. It was incredible. So we got to do so many fun things, and the girls loved it, and I loved it. So we have the program kind of small initially because I just wanted to make sure it was a success.
Yeah, yeah. So through this series of lessons, you're sort of building up to something bigger.
Exactly. So when we designed the program, I actually came up with the idea for the final trip first. And then I thought, what are the steps we need to do to kind of get there? Biggest thing is fitness, you
mm-hmm.
know, bike riding skills and fitness, because Klutna Lake is also a dirt trail, so they had to work on mountain biking.
Mm-hmm.
We did a workshop about that. But the thing is that 12 and 13 years old, they're learning so fast. I mean, their bike skills just improved so much.
Right.
So that was really cool.
So what did you find about their fitness? The rap on kids these days is that they're all couch potatoes.
No, a lot of them were pretty determined
mm-hmm.
To ride hard. I'd say about half and half. The other half kind of wanted to walk, or, you know, I'd have to poke them along. But the cool thing was it wasn't competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really care how fast they rode or who was first or who was last. The whole point was just to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a race. So it's kind of fun to have it get into being active without it being competitive. That's not something you do a whole lot in school.
Yeah.
So
no, it's
cool.
And it's so valuable at that
mm-hmm.
age. I mean, it's sort of the junior Nordic thing, too.
Exactly.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
get out there and do it and just have fun.
Yeah, and just have fun.
To sort of get past
there.
This mm-hmm. this and time period when you're so worried about your self-image
mm-hmm.
and everything. Yeah. So I'm curious as to to what extent your identity and the fact that you've done these, you know, big races and done all this was an attractor for them, or did it just not matter that much who you were, do you think?
You know, I didn't really even tell them.
Oh, really?
But they found out, or
uh-huh.
they knew. You know, I didn't, that wasn't the point for me to make that a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would share stories with them, but more than anything, they were the ones who wanted to do the talking. So mostly I would just
uh-huh.
listen. You know, I think it was inspiring to them, but I was also kind of like, I'm also just their friend riding with them. So
yeah.
It's not that big of a deal.
Well, it reminds me a little of the Fast and Female program that like
mm-hmm.
Keegan Randall and some other sort of famous skiers did, where
mm-hmm.
they sort of use their fame to draw girls into the sport and like realize that, yeah, you can excel.
Oh, we also had a lesson meeting with Holly Brooks.
Oh, great.
And it was awesome. She was amazing. She was 5 months pregnant
mm-hmm.
and she invited us all into the room and just shared her stories about winning Mount Marathon and deciding to go to the Olympics, and talked with the girls about positive self-talk and making goals. And it was just amazing.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
So then you had a setback. We can't pass
oh, yeah,
that
I know,
over
I
that.
Forgot.
Like, which is in the newspaper, right? So you'd arrange for these girls to get bikes. Mm-hmm. And how did that work? Who was donating these bikes?
Specialized bicycle company. So actually, when I got this idea to do the program, I thought, oh, I'll just ask them and see if they'll give us the bikes. They sponsor me. And so I pitched the idea. And they said, yeah, that's awesome. We'd love to send bikes. So they sent us up 11 brand new hardtail mountain bikes.
Wow.
That's
a huge donation.
It's a huge donation. And helmets. And the bikes arrived a day before the program started.
Oh, wow.
And so
we
caught the bikes.
So they had to be put together and everything.
Yeah. So they came on that Saturday.
Oh, wow.
And then everybody from the bicycle shop helped me put the bikes together. We had kind of an assembly line going to build them all up.
Wow.
And we put the girls' first names on the top tubes.
Oh, sweet.
And then had them all parked outside for them to come the next day, which is Sunday, our parent meeting. So everything happened
girls.
Just in time. It was, oh, man. So that was really cool.
Uh-huh.
And we had a safe riding lesson with Lindsay from Bike Anchorage. And so the parents were there for that to make sure, you know, we're kind of knowing how to signal and mm-hmm. be aware on the road. And then the next day was our first lesson where we rode over to the Trek store to learn about bicycle maintenance. There was still so much snow on the ground.
Yeah.
They had to push the hills. I mean, because it was just snowy.
Yeah.
It was just that time of year. We had snow late into April this year. So yeah. That was a cool transition to see it change.
Yeah. So then the bikes all got stolen.
Yeah, half of them.
Yeah.
I came to Stellar on halfway through the program, I think 3 or 4 weeks in. And one of the girls, Lily, comes running up to me with these huge eyes. And she said, the bikes are gone. And I was like, take it easy. They're probably just moved somewhere else in the school.
Oh, wow.
You know, chill out. Don't stress out. And then I see the principal and the administrative assistant and their teacher, Ashley, who's a friend of mine, mm-hmm. all coming towards me with these same huge eyes. And I was like, oh, no, they're gone. We were storing them in a relocatable classroom behind the school that automatically locks. And the door just didn't get fully closed.
Oh,
that's
wow.
what I ended up finding out. And somebody went and stole five of the bikes. So
there's no way of finding out. I mean, you're not going to get them back, right?
I've gotten two back.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I've gotten two of them back.
How did that happen?
The police brought them back. I sent them all the serial numbers,
they
found two of them.
Amazing.
But even before that, we replaced them. So my friend Rue was actually making a video.
Because you got some news coverage. Yeah.
Yeah, she was making a video about the program in general, and then mm-hmm. she was there for the theft. So she took photos, and then there was a newspaper article with my phone number at the bottom. And immediately, once it came out online, people started calling me, offering to donate bikes, offering to donate money, you know, just heart-wrenched. I had so many conversations where people were just like, I'm so upset about this. I just want to make it right.
What a great community.
It was incredible. So we had to make a plan, you mm-hmm. know, how are we going to kind of facilitate this? I decided, well, we have these bikes at the bicycle shop, the same ones that got stolen. I'm just going to raise enough money to buy the bikes again to replace them.
Mm-hmm.
And within a day, we raised $10,000.
Amazing.
I know. Enough to fund buying bikes for next year's program.
Oh, wow. It's so more money than you needed.
More money than we needed.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was so cool.
Yeah, that must have just really made you feel great.
Yeah. I mean, the bikes were stolen on Monday. They walked to their lesson, which was a yoga class, and walked back to school. And then by Wednesday morning, I went to the shop and built up the bikes and had them ready again for Wednesday afternoon's mountain bike session. It's like we didn't miss anything.
This sounds like a full-time job for you.
It was a lot of work. But I'm also working at the bicycle shop,
and
they were so flexible about
okay.
it. So they said, you know, whenever you have to go do what you have to do, that's fine. You can just leave. You can be here when you want to be
mm-hmm.
here. So that's how I could do it.
Sweet. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking with Lael Wilcox, and she led this GRIT program for middle school girls in Anchorage to become cyclists who can do a long-distance overnight ride. As she has done all over the world, she won the Coast to Coast. What was the race?
It's the Trans Am Bike Race.
Trans Am Bike Race. You can hear that interview if you go to outdoorexplorer.org and check it out. But today we're talking about what she's doing now. So tell me about the big finale. How did that go, and what was it like with these girls?
It went great. But the only problem for me was I was mountain biking the week before, and I took a huge fall and fractured two ribs.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, no, I've got this big ride this weekend. I went and got an x-ray. The chiropractor, my friend, told me to not ride my bike at all for 2 weeks. But I was like, I have to. I got to do it.
Uh-huh.
So I took like 2 days off, and then I kind of practiced trying to get on my bike. And,
oh, no.
And then I just rode it. But it was pretty rough.
Did it really hurt?
You know, it really hurt. Like really, really hurt. But we still did it. So we met at Bagich Friday afternoon.
Wow.
And then rode out. The first night was Beach Lake Lodge,
mm-hmm.
which is a beautiful spot. I'd never been there before.
Me neither.
Awesome. It's out in Juyek. And you can rent a lodge, and there are a couple other cabins.
Oh, nice.
Run by Parks and Rec. They gave us a really good price to go do that.
So it's there in Beach Lake Park?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, so we stayed there that night. The next morning, we rode out to Eklutna Lake Road, and then it's an 1,800-foot climb up to the lake.
Yeah,
it's
that's heavy.
It's a beast. So it was tough.
Oh, I'm sure you got some significant complaints.
Oh, man, I couldn't believe they did it. They were so nervous, and
uh-huh.
then we would just ride about half a mile, take a break, and then go after it again,
uh-huh.
and it's about 5 miles of that. It's so steep.
Yeah.
But they did
it. And you were doing it with a broken ribs.
Yeah, but I wasn't thinking about it. I was so focused on these girls.
So what was the weather like? Because that could make a big difference.
It was nice. It was nice, actually, probably kind of partly cloudy.
Mm-hmm.
It rained a little bit the following morning, but we kind of lucked out.
So everybody made it.
Everybody made it. Got to the parking lot. We actually had my friend bring us pizza.
Oh, nice.
And then we had pizza in the parking lot and then rode out. It's 11 miles or 12 miles out to the Forest Service cabin. So that's the kind of dirt, gravel,
mm-hmm.
mountain bike part.
But pretty flat.
Pretty flat, mm-hmm. And then stayed the night out there.
And I bet that was wild.
It was so fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, we had to go get our own water. And Kate hauled this trailer full of cooked pasta. So,
oh, wow.
She carried so much weight out there.
Up the
thing
mountain?
Was just banging around. No, just from the lake.
Okay, good.
And it was great. You know, the girls uh-huh. could do whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, they went off in little groups to go kind of explore the
mm-hmm.
river. And it was such an incredible trip.
And a real accomplishment for them, so they really feel good about it.
And then
yeah.
from town. So then the next morning, we rode back to the trailhead, 12 miles back, and their parents met them to pick them up there.
Nice.
And the parents were like, you rode your bike all the way out here? You know, it's like, it feels like the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
From their school. It was so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, that's so great. Cool. What a great accomplishment. Do you think about, like, being a teacher or being a coach, or, like, is that something you'd want to do?
I've never really thought about it. You know, I really like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Just working at a bike shop and volunteering.
I guess. Or
yeah.
making these programs up, you
uh-huh.
know. I guess that's the only way I can do it because it takes so much energy. But I'm so excited about it. I'm like, let's
yeah.
just do it.
Well, I mean, your life has worked out pretty well so
yeah,
far without a plan.
Out.
So why make a plan, right?
It's working out.
Yeah. So you have a goal for this summer.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. You're trying to cover the entire state.
Mm-hmm. So my goal this summer is to ride all the major roads in Alaska. So it's about 4,000 miles.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm going to do it in a series of trips. So my first
trip. By the way,
trip
it's already like late June.
I know. I got to start riding.
We're pre-recording, but we're talking on the solstice, actually, the 21st. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I'll start on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And then for the first ride, I'll go all the way up to Dead Horse.
Wow.
Yeah. I've never been north of Fox, so I'm excited.
It's so beautiful up there, but I mean, the mosquitoes
are going to be terrible.
Yeah.
I'm actually bringing a tent, and I don't usually because
mm-hmm.
I know they're going to be so bad. Yeah.
And this is solo?
Solo. Yeah. So I'm actually inviting people to meet me on Saturday to all ride out together.
Okay.
So our first night will just be out to the Eagle River campground.
Mm-hmm.
My 5-year-old nephew's coming. My parents are coming. You know,
uh-huh.
all these people. And then camp out, and then the next day I'll ride to Palmer with my boyfriend Nick, and then we'll ride over Hatcher's Pass to Willow, and then after that I'll be solo.
That'll be quite a climb too.
Yeah, I know. I like that one.
So what kind of bike do you use for riding these gravel roads? I mean, it's not exactly like mountain biking because
right.
it's not like going to mm-hmm. be muddy, but it's still pretty
I'm
bumpy.
Actually getting a new bike. It's a new design for a bike too. It's called the Specialized Diverge. So it's like a road bike with drop handlebar, but then a bit wider of tires.
Hmm.
It also has a little shock in the head tube to kind of absorb the road.
So it's designed for touring on gravel roads?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of an adventure road bike.
Okay, cool.
So both gravel and pavement, you can kind of do both.
I hope you like it.
Yeah, I know I will.
You're better, right. So you go up to Dead Horse, and then what are you going to do?
And then from there, I think I'm going to actually hitch back to Fairbanks. And then I'm trying to get out to Sheep Mountain Lodge on the 7th because my friend's racing the Fire Reed 400.
Okay.
So I want to crew for her. On my way up, though, I'm going to ride the Denali Highway, too.
Oh, okay.
Cantwell to Paxson, and then go Paxson to Delta Junction, and then up from
okay.
there.
Okay, so you already have done half the Richardson then, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the kind of tricky part is linking up everything
without
so
doubling
it's efficient,
up, yeah.
you know. But we'll see, it'll work out.
Yeah, so what's the rest of your plan?
The rest of my plan for mm-hmm. the roads?
Yeah.
So I'll come back to town, do the Fire Read, and then... You know, I don't know the next one I'm going to do. I'm mm-hmm. going to do this one first.
And just keep working
you know
at
what?
It until you're
I really yeah. am kind of excited to do the spur roads that are just north of Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
like out to Circle, Manly Hot Springs.
Steese Highway and the, yeah.
I'm also really looking forward to Top of the World Highway.
Mm-hmm. That one's
beautiful.
Then
going out to Eagle.
Yeah.
I've been out to McCarthy, but not since I was 10.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents used to have a little store there by the mine.
Oh, really? Neat.
So I'm just, you know, looking forward to kind of linking
You've
all
already
this
seen
up.
The rest of the world, so see Alaska.
Yeah.
yeah.
Not yet. So many places.
Yeah.
You know.
But I mean, you're kind of doing this just for fun, right?
Oh, yeah. Just for fun.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any racing plans?
Not right now. We'll see.
Is that something you want to keep doing, or?
I don't know. You know, I'll see how I feel at the end of the summer. Because at that point, I'll be in such good shape, I could kind of just go do something.
Yeah. And get out of Alaska, because unless you want to do snow biking.
I love that. But I think I'll come back for it.
Did
I'll
you try any of those races, like the what is it called? The Frosty Bottom?
Oh, I've raced the Frosty Bottom once. And then last year, I raced the White Mountains 100, which was awesome. Up north of Fairbanks,
uh-huh.
there's a loop you can ride, and it's incredible. Forest Service cabins all along the way. We went and toured it first.
And you can do it ski,
bike, or on foot.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, what a great route. It's beautiful up there.
Yeah. What was the competition like? I mean, because you've done this international competition.
Yeah.
What are the Alaska competitors
fierce,
like?
Pretty fierce, you know. People up here are fast mm-hmm. on fat bikes. They're super fast. I got third.
Mm-hmm.
Which was good, but I was like, after the race, I still had tons of energy. I was like, oh man, it was short for me.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
100 miles is like kind of a short one.
You're used to like really pounding it out. But is there a lot of technique involved in that too, though?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in terms
tons.
Of these guys who've done a lot of it, they probably really know how to
exactly.
keep moving.
It's a lot about tire pressure. You know, if mm-hmm. it's softer snow, you really have to let your pressure down and be able to balance. Out there, it got kind of weird because visibility went really low. So as we're going over this pass, I couldn't see anything. I tried to wear these bright yellow sunglasses or like kind of worker glasses, but it didn't do anything. That was my strategy, and it was a bust. I don't know how they do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's more and more people doing these kinds of long-distance things. It's
mm-hmm.
like the randonnée groups.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the Firewood 400 you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You might probably do pretty good in that one if you wanted to
that
do
was
that.
My first race ever.
Oh, really?
3 years ago. So my friend that's I'm going back to crew for, she was the person who got me to do this in the first place. I never would have raced.
Really?
She was like, you should really do this race. She started showing up at my work. She was like, are you going to do it? The week before the race, I signed
uh-huh.
up like 2 days before. And then she was my support vehicle.
That was
for
before
it.
The Israel race and
mm-hmm.
before the.
Yeah,
wow.
It was the summer before.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up getting second overall to a guy on a recumbent by like 12 minutes. You know, I didn't even know if I could finish this. You know, it's like 400 miles.
Is
that
really fair competition with a recumbent?
I don't know. He still has to get up Thompson Pass with that.
True.
Thing. You know,
but
that's
I mean,
tough.
They have a much less wind resistance.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I didn't know how it would go, and so that's why I want to come back and be there for her. She's never done anything like this, but she was the whole reason I started racing,
mm-hmm.
you know. So
how does it work getting a sponsorship? I mean, don't they want you to just keep racing and racing and racing?
You know, with them, it's kind of through media.
Oh, I see.
So I just have to have some kind of media presence, which is a huge amount of freedom
mm-hmm.
That I can do programs like Grit, and they'll support that. I can do this Alaska Road Rides, and they'll support that. But I'm just getting equipment now.
Just figuring out how, and figuring out this next step in your
mm-hmm,
life, right? Because
exactly.
you always rode You didn't ride great bikes when you were riding around
the world. Not at all. And now I have these like super nice bikes, which is great. You know, that they're a joy to ride.
Yeah. So you want to keep doing programs with kids?
I love it. Yeah, I do. Well, yeah, we'll do Grit again next year.
Okay, great. Every kid in the city is going to want to do it now.
I know. It's hard to organize. It's hard to expand. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you need more manpower. I need more people organizing. Kate is incredible. She is so on top of it, so organized. So we just need more Kates.
So do you see like starting an organization that does that? Or I mean, then that's a lot of rigmarole. It seems like your life has been cool because
exactly.
You get to do what you want.
To be able to do what I want. But well, no, the more the idea is that other people will want to coordinate their own grits.
Okay.
So like I have a friend, Amy Breen, that's going to start one in Palmer. That's where she lives now. Kate and I will do the two next year. So we're working with Bagich and Stellar again. And then my dream is to work with Wendler and Clark as the other two schools.
And it doesn't have to be about like starting a nonprofit organization and having
an executive director.
It's like
Bike Anchorage adopted our program,
oh, great.
And they're a nonprofit.
Uh-huh.
So they're
so then you can channel the donations.
Exactly,
and stuff
they're
like
taking
that.
Care of our finances.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge help, and that's just Lindsay, the president, just offered. She was like, you know what, you guys want? She first offered in the beginning to cover us through their insurance, and then she was like, well, let's make it more official. We'll take care of your finances. And I was like, just taking this off my shoulders.
It's nice.
Like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, just have somebody step in and offer that.
Right. But I mean, I love the sort of DIY, sort of just go out and do it attitude.
Oh, yeah.
And make
just
it
make
happen.
It happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it can, you know,
yeah.
In a couple months.
Well, I'm really going to be looking forward to hearing about your next exploits and how your summer tour goes and what races you get into. I mean, like, we all think, oh, wow, what's Lael going to do next?
I know, me too.
Everybody's like,
So fun.
Yeah, that makes life exciting, doesn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So you're not close to, like, settling down and being done with this. Yeah. It's too fun.
Too fun.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah,
Lael Wilcox. We'll call you the Grand Poobah and founder of Grit Girls.
Co-founder. With Kate. I wish Kate could have been here too.
Yeah.
She's fishing out of Cordova.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And Grit again stands for Girls.
Riding into Tomorrow.
Okay, good. Okay, well, thanks so much. And stick with us. We're going to have talk more about this kind of program for biking for kids as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
This is Charles Wolforth. A few decades ago, almost half of all school kids walked or biked to school. Now it's down to 1 in 8. Meanwhile, obesity has climbed, along with the health problems that go with it. Walking and biking to school each day could help parents and kids get more exercise, but a side effect, Public Media's Jake Harper reports from Indianapolis, in some places it's not easy.
How are these sidewalks?
They need to be cleaned off.
Maybe just cleaned up a little bit?
It's a hot day, and some adults have taken a group of kids to explore the neighborhood around their school, since charter school, in southeast Indianapolis. They're looking for missing sidewalks and bike lanes, potholes, overgrown bushes, things that make it hard for kids to walk to school.
Now, we're wanting to cross the street over this way. What do you think there should be right here?
A crosswalk.
A crosswalk, shouldn't there?
What they're doing is called a walk audit. The theory is you identify and fix some of these obstacles, and kids might be more likely to walk or bike to school.
There definitely are schools where walking and biking is a great option and is a viable option for those students.
Alan Henderson is leading the group as part of his work with Indiana's Safe Routes to School programs, which use federal funds to improve infrastructure. He says one reason fewer kids walk to school these days is distance. Over the years, schools have been built further from communities, which means more kids taking the bus.
And we really just have not broken out of that paradigm yet.
But he says even for kids who live close to school, there's still concern about traffic.
Did you guys notice how fast that truck was going? Did you think he was going pretty fast?
Yeah,
all right.
Too fast.
So,
that's why the group is checking out the sidewalks and roads. But getting kids to walk is not just about adding crosswalks and speed limit signs.
It's not a situation in which if you build it, they will come or they will start using it. There also has to be some encouragement on the part of the school.
Since charter school did a tally and found that the vast majority of its students arrive by car or bus, just 1 in 10 walks.
There is a child who uses a skateboard, and there was a child who used a scooter, and we found that there were no bikes.
Kate Voss has lived in the neighborhood for 16 years, and she helped get a Safe Routes to School grant for Cinch Charter School. She says a huge barrier to walking around here is a fear of crime. While they walk around, students notice abandoned houses and litter, things that reinforce the idea that this can be a rough place.
Whether it's true or not, they just don't feel that they can be by themselves, that somebody might not harass them or try to do harm to them.
The worries over traffic and crime, those issues feed on themselves. The more cars dropping kids off, the more dangerous traffic appears. Fewer kids walking makes it seem more likely that something bad could happen to a child on the way to school. Public health advocates like Alan Henderson want to reverse that cycle.
And certainly the more students who are doing it, the safer it becomes, the more likely that parents will allow their students to walk because everybody's doing it.
Stephanie Thornberry is with the Marion County Public Health Department. She was part of the group, and she thinks walking to school could help with obesity later on.
Childhood obesity is linked to adult obesity. So if we can make changes in childhood to get that number down, then when they get to be adults, they're less likely to have obesity and all the chronic diseases that go along with that.
Kate Voss plans to hold walking and biking safety classes at the school with raffles to bring people in. And a few kids are going to get some free bikes. She thinks walking and biking would be good for the students, but she also hopes it will have a ripple effect.
I never look at us as just an island here. It's not just getting to school back and forth, but it's just a sense of security for our families and for our community.
Jake Harper, Side Effects Public Media.
This story was produced by Side Effects Public Media, a news collaborative covering public health. We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking today about bike programs for kids, and you know what a great sport cycling is for kids. It gives them freedom, it gives them fitness, it gives them, you know, as we heard in the first half, a sense of accomplishment. And now there's we're going to be talking about another program, which is really taking off and is a new thing that you probably haven't heard of yet, called the Susitna Bike Institute, and its leader Scott Menzies is here. And this is a program that's helping kids become bike racers, but is also offering classes for those of us who just want to learn how to be better bike mechanics. And I have a lot more to learn about it, but that's sort of my quick two cents version of it. And Scott is here with me. Thanks for being in the studio, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
So I thought it was such an interesting model you have, where you're giving classes that people are paying for, and that's sort of the money making part. And then you're using that to support underprivileged kids, foster kids, to be bike racers.
Correct, yep.
What a great idea. Where did this idea come from?
Well, kind of a few years ago, I taught at a bike school. I taught at the Appalachian Bicycle Institute. And I kind of looked at the model a little bit. I was happy to teach, but I wanted to do more. So I kind of been brewing a long time on how do I make a educational center that, you know, doesn't just benefit the proprietor, it benefits the community, and how can we get more people involved in something that, you know, some people that have less money don't get to be involved in.
Yeah. So tell me what a bike school is. I mean, that's kind of a whole new concept for me. It sounds like you've worked at one and now you've started one.
Uh-huh. So the idea is if you want to learn anything about bikes, we have basically a classroom setting that's all hands-on. So you would come in, we would give you a nice lecture about what you're about to learn, and then we would put your bike in a stand, and we would go through every single detail, and you personally would have hands-on every single thing that you'd like to learn in detail. So you'll be taking everything apart. We kind of have a policy of, you know, not taking tools out of people's hands.
They have to learn it themselves. In other words, you're not going to show it. They're going to do it.
Yep. You're going to actually do all the work while having a professional guide you through this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea.
Cause a big part of the fear that people have for any kind of mechanical thing is they're going to ruin it and they're not going to be able to put it back together.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like step one in learning to fix stuff, right? It's like, don't be afraid.
Right. we have nice, we have a great set of teachers. I'm one of the lead teachers, and we have a lot of good formulas to make it so that people learn a bit of mechanical aptitude while they're there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you take something apart, we make it so that when you go on your own to take something apart, you know, we teach you how to take it apart so that you can put it back together.
Right.
So it's a kind of a real fun.
Some tricks to the trade there.
Oh, yeah. A lot of tricks and a lot of fun as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you've gotten started and you've had your first round of classes, right?
Yep. We opened in February, and we have been pretty slammed every single weekend. Classes fill up usually when I post a schedule. So it's a lot to handle, and a lot of people are excited about it. But the school is expanding as fast as I can handle. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you were saying you actually quit your day job.
Yep, just quit my day job to be full-time at the school. And more programs are unfolding, and more people are going to be getting an education, you know. Previously, they wouldn't have had that opportunity, and now they do.
So what would be the example of a class that you would have? They're just one-day classes, essentially? Or?
We have a curriculum, so mm-hmm. we basically have anywhere from, you know, a two-hour class of fixing your flat and lubing your chain all the way to brake, hydraulic overhaul, suspension overhauls, and tuning. So it can be very, very in-depth, or it can be very, very simple, and we use simplicity to do all those things. So mm-hmm. whether or not, you don't have to have any skill level to take any of the classes. It's any beginner, anybody can take it. So nothing is above anyone.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious as to what kind of people you're seeing come through your classes so far. Is it people who want to get sort of step one, or is it people who sort of are honing their skills?
It's mostly garage tinkerers, you know, people that, their kid's bike, they want to work on it with them together. And, you know, they just, you know, they've done it, but they've failed, and kind of they want to be able to know what they're doing. So it's a lot of tinkerers that really just want to, you know, every time there's a problem, they don't necessarily want to bring it somewhere. They would like to fix it themselves. And mm-hmm. so I noticed that Anchorage and Alaskans really enjoy the kind of do-it-yourself.
Self-reliance.
Uh-huh. Making sure that you can do the required task. And now there's a chance to educate yourself on this specific one.
Yeah.
So pretty cool.
It is, and there's actually a lot to learn. I was kind of came up with one kind of bike, and now I've got a bike with, with disc brakes and with suspension, and I don't necessarily know how to fix all that stuff. I know how to fix the old stuff.
We offer all those classes. So if you, in particular, got a new bike and you don't know how to fix it, or even what some of the options are. So mm-hmm. you may have certain toggles on your bike or certain settings that you are not familiar with. We can take you through and show you every single thing and how and why your suspension disc brakes work. You know, if they're cable or hydraulic, or if you have rebound settings that, there's a whole lot of stuff mm-hmm. going on in there. And it's really important to kind of see what you bought and why it works and how to make it work for you.
Right. So how did this get set up? I mean, you obviously have to have a facility for doing this. You know, it seems like it's a pretty complex undertaking, really.
It was fairly ambitious. I'm still not kind of sure why I decided to do something so large, but I've been working on this for almost 2 years. Finally, this has come to fruition. So I've been looking pretty hard for a space, mm-hmm. which is very hard to find shop space in Anchorage.
Yeah.
We finally found something. You know, we have an 800 square foot shop. It's super professional in there. We have basically what looks like the back of a bike shop. And the front is more of a classroom area, or we can all sit down together and kind of go over what we learned and what we're about to learn. So it's been a lot of hard work, a lot of finding the specific thing that we need. And, you know, not everything can be perfect. So we're a bit out of the way. We're in Sand Lake next to Kincaid. So that's you know, it's got its benefits
it's
out there.
It's a good cycling area.
But we also kind of miss out on the areas we would like to see, you know, Mountain View and be kind of in an area that's more accessible to people that don't have as much.
Right, right. So how did you come up with the funding and put all this together? Did you get grants or is it like, did you get a bank loan? I mean, this seems like such an unusual thing to do. I mean, it does not exist anywhere in Alaska.
I basically had spent every single extra penny I had.
Oh my gosh, you just did it on your own.
I just did it on my own. Every extra penny I had, I would buy a tool. I would pay for, you know, IRS forms. I would basically do everything kind of piecemeal. As soon as I had an extra dime here or there, I would make sure that I bought something for the school so that eventually, you know, 2 years later, I would have enough stuff to have a school. So I kind of just collected and you know, I didn't have a loan or anything kind of helping me, mostly because, you know, just doing it on my own, and it's hard to work a full-time job and write grants and get 501c3 status. Mm-hmm. It's a real large undertaking, so it almost was easier for me to just spend every single penny I had making it work. So
Now you've got something.
Yeah. So sometimes it takes time to collect, and sometimes you got to hoard a little extra and kind of lose some space. But
well, it just strikes me you must have had quite a vision and quite a bit of drive to make this work. I mean, because most of us are watching Netflix or riding our bikes.
Yeah, you know, I just kind of came up with this plan, and my plan was do one thing a day. That one thing a day turned into two things a day, and then it kept spiraling. And eventually, you know, if you do one thing a day, 365 days a year, you have 365 things you've done in that year for your
goal.
Yeah, your goal. So, it really adds up big time in the long run. So even just one thing a day towards your goal can really set you far.
Well, good for you.
Thank you.
So, what does it cost to do these classes? How do people like go on the website to see what's offered, or let's do some of the practicalities.
Okay. So our pricing is based on class, right? So if you wanted to take a flat repair, you know, our most basic class, 2 or 3 hours, that's a $50 class. Our classes range from $50 to $750 at the moment. So we have a pretty big curriculum, and there's everything in between that number. We also, you know, what's great about having a nonprofit is you can do sliding scale pricing. So if, you know, if you make a certain amount less than $20,000 a year, the price for your class fee goes down. So essentially, you know, if you didn't make very much money, you could pay $0 for this class that is $750 and get a big education. And
maybe learn to be a bike mechanic. Huh?
Yeah, that's kind of the idea, that we are skill training and skill building for future employment, and hopefully learning other skills like, you know, you could be a diesel mechanic or you know, any other kind of mechanic. You know, as long as you have that aptitude to fix things and want to learn, you can kind of go far.
Mm-hmm. Cool. The Outdoor Explorer, we are talking about the Susitna Bike Institute. Why Susitna, by the way?
You know, every day, you know, you walk on, ride your bike on the coastal trail, and there you see Susitna, sleeping lady, out in the distance. And I just wanted to keep it local to Alaska and Anchorage and make sure that people are
it's a good name.
Proud of our environment.
Absolutely. Scott Menzies is the founder of the Susitna Bike Institute, which, as you've heard, is giving classes, and you can sign up for them right now and learn how to work on your own bike and probably save money on having it done by a shop, and also just get some great skills and have fun with it. And I like fixing stuff at home, partly because I get up in the morning, have my cup of coffee, I don't want to put my bike in the car and drive somewhere, right? I'd like rather fix it now.
Yeah.
So the school is only half of your concept. The other half is this work that you're doing with kids and racing and kind of reaching down to kids who really need a hand up, sounds like.
Absolutely, yep. So basically the other side of this program is, you know, the nonprofit side, you know, you have to have some programs and you have to do some good for your community, and that's, you know, definitely our our biggest priority. Mm-hmm. So one of our programs is to basically have a race team, you know, underprivileged youth, kids that would never normally get a bike and are athletically inclined to get on a bike and go race, you know, do the mountain bike series and the cross mm-hmm. series and the fat bike series. So spring, summer, and fall, essentially, and winter, sorry. So getting kids out there, you know, this program will have coaching. We'll have racing kits, you know, outfits and gear that they need. We'll have bikes and a couple other
shoes.
Things. Shoes, yep, whatever they need to be mm-hmm. geared up for racing and taught and, you know, have mentors that are, you know, guiding them through their race season, especially in training too. So all that's going to be provided in those programs. And we're working hard on getting some grants for that right now, but we're, you know, every day that goes by, we're getting closer and closer to these goals. So, mm-hmm. Essentially, you know, kiddos can be racing out there right with everyone else and having a whole bunch of fun.
Yeah. So, and you're focusing on kids who wouldn't have this opportunity otherwise. Have you figured out how you're going to identify them and bring them in?
We don't have kind of you know, a solid plan on how that works. You know, sort of how things have been working is kind of the seat of our pants. And, you know, someone hears about an organization and kind of forwards an email on to someone else. And, you know, eventually we just get email that will say, hey, you know, I'm a foster parent and I have a kiddo that, you know, loves bikes and, you know, would just love to take your program. So we've been kind of fortunate for people to find us. And so we've been able to kind of start to tap into something I would have never known how to get hold of. And mm-hmm. people are starting to come to us about it. So it's kind of cool to see how all that stuff pans out.
You know, great, every day is a different day. The grapevine is the best way to get information around, huh?
Yeah, totally. It's kind of surprising.
Yeah. So it's what was your inspiration for doing that? I mean, was there something that happened or somebody you met, or sort of where did that come from, this idea to get kids who obviously are, if they're in foster care, they are having a real hard time, to get them into bike racing?
Well, I mean, there's kind of a demographic for, you know, people who ride bicycles, mm-hmm. right? It's usually a well-to-do person, right? You know, so they have an access to money, which has mm-hmm. access to bikes. And, you know, they're super, super fun and super community oriented. But if you don't have money and you don't have a bike, you don't have access to that community that is notoriously, you know, kind of feeding itself goodness. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's always empowerment. There's always a freedom of transportation. There's a, you know, kind of your own empowerment, essentially. So if kids don't have access to that part of their community, they're really missing out on the most important thing.
Yeah. Right?
So
yeah.
Goodness, community, you know, laughter, you know,
health, yeah,
feeling,
transportation,
some, yeah, health, yeah. Agency for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so having programs like this can start to reach out. We may not reach as many as we like, but, you know, our goal is to have 30 kids a year, you know, go through our race programs.
That'd be quite a lot, actually.
And you know, hopefully they can move on to something else. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the vision and why.
Because that's cool.
People need to be a part of their community as well.
Yeah, for sure. So Scott Menzies is the founder of the Susitna Bike Institute, which is going to be this bike school teaching people to fix their bikes, and then is also hoping to have a race team of kids who need some help, given bikes and given the equipment and the training they need to do that, which seems great. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are listeners that want to support you. So I'm sure you have a website.
Yep. Well, yeah. We have a website. We're a full 501c3 nonprofit, and we have a donate button on our page.
Great. We can get you linked up on outdoorexplorer.org,
cool.
And people can find you that way.
Cool.
So, Scott, tell me how you got to be a gearhead, if you don't mind that term. You know, that you obviously are really into fixing bikes, and Where did you discover that? Were you like a 6-year-old in the driveway or what?
I was a 17-year-old in the driveway, mm-hmm. and, you know, I was hanging out with a bunch of friends, and we both, we were walking down the street, and we saw bikes in the garbage. And
oh, wow, yeah.
We were like, why are they throwing these away? You know, later I would find out why they were throwing them away, but...
Maybe a good reason.
Uh-huh. and we took them home to our garage, and we started messing with them. The cool part is we fixed them, and we went on these super cool rides, and we were, you know, started with two of us.
On the bikes you got out of the garbage?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
And so it started with two of us that fixed our own bikes, and we started riding all over the city and having a whole bunch of fun. And
was this in Anchorage?
This was in Rochester, New York.
Oh, okay.
So a long time ago when I lived there. We just started riding, exploring places uh-huh. we'd never seen, and the
suddenly you're free, right?
Yeah. Totally. The group of two turned into a group of five. The group of five turned into a group of 10. So we'd all have just weekly rides and of stuff we just fixed up out of the trash. So,
uh-huh. Which kind of gives you like a feeling of like it's much more valuable, right, than if somebody just gave it to you.
Yeah, totally.
You earned it.
So, yeah, I was kind of forced to be a mechanic, you know, just out of sheer getting on the bike and going. So mm-hmm. I kept that. Doing that for friends, and I ended up moving to Austin, Texas, where I volunteered at a community bike shop called Yellow Bike Project, and they taught me a whole bunch of stuff, and then I went on to be a frame maker. So I actually made frames from a professional frame builder.
Like in a factory? Or
It was basically a small production
factory. So it's like a custom boutique kind of thing?
Yeah, we were making custom boutique stuff.
And so I was welding and all that kind of stuff?
I learned to weld there, and I learned to sweep the floor really well, and I learned to strip bikes for paint. And
strip bikes for paint?
Right, so you would, you know, when somebody would bring their bike in, they'd say, hey, I want my bike painted, and so you'd strip their bike down and take the paint off. And then when custom bikes were done, we would get them prepped for paint. Mm-hmm. So kind of every step except building. So on my off time, I would build frames at home.
Oh, so cool.
I just kept going.
And so you became a bike builder yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And then my boss there told me, hey, you know, you're not really a good bike mechanic. You should go work at a bicycle shop. And I said, you know, I'm making bikes, but I don't know how to fix them that well. I should go work at a bike shop. So that was about 13 years ago. And I started being a bike mechanic and making bikes at home. So pretty full blast bike.
Yeah,
bike,
really.
Bike, everything bike.
So do you, in the bike industry, or do you have like levels of expertise? Like there'll be a journeyman plumber. It's like, I mean, it's that kind of thing, but it's more casual, right?
Historically has been casual. This year is going to be the first year that there's starting to be certifications that shops may want to get their mechanics certified in. Mm-hmm. What's cool about our school is we're going to start having certifications in September to basically be internationally recognized as a bicycle mechanic. So you would take our class, and at the end of the class, you would get a certification by the Professional Bicycle Mechanics Association. So it's starting to get some credibility and starting to have some meaning. And, you know, bike mechanic, you know, as much as people think, it's just a bike. Well, there's a lot going on in a bike, that a lot of information that people have to remember. And bicycle mechanics have a hard job. So
especially these modern bikes, yeah. Uh-huh.
There's a lot of complicated stuff and a lot of specialty tools, and it's not just to fix it with your spanner wrench and keep going.
Yeah. So so you anticipate that like the people who are already working at bike mechanics in Anchorage might come to your school and like brush up and get a certification?
We're hoping so. Some people that are currently bike mechanics can kind of test out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they wouldn't have to take their They can basically just get their certification from being a bicycle mechanic. The only stipulation to that is they have to have continuing education. So every 2 years, they would have to take a new class, like a wheel building class or a suspension class or a disc brake class, just to keep up their certification.
Hmm. Are there schools like this all around the country?
We, as far as I know, are one of very few institutes that's specific to this. There's about four that I know of in the lower 48. And so we're basically the fifth bicycle institute in basically this hemisphere. So, and we're the only one that's nonprofit. So that's really cool to see.
Well, and we're like a real bike community because, you know, like Fat Tire Bikes came from here and all this stuff is like really happening here that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, Anchorage has a very vibrant and excellent bicycle community. I had no idea before I moved up here
really
how many people were on bikes, and just seeing it is really impressive. It's really incredible how many people ride all year round too, so it doesn't really matter the weather usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of a new thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you a, you're not a competitor yourself, but you're a recreational rider.
Yeah, mostly a recreational rider. I do a lot of mountain biking.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly enjoy touring, so I've done a little bit of touring. One of the greatest ways to see your landscape and see your communities and see your, you know, see your world.
So you've done some epic rides?
A few here and there, you know. Uh-huh. You know, so
give us an example.
Rode 1,000 miles from Green Bay, Wisconsin to upstate New York through the Great Lakes.
Oh, that must have been pretty.
So it was super beautiful, and got to swim in the Great Lakes every day and eat sandwiches next to the shoreline. So super peaceful, really, really pleasant.
Got to
be in all the maple syrup farms and kind of do some taste testing. And that was just pretty vibrant and super beautiful. And the weather was pleasant. Yeah. The water was nice.
Something you said I thought was interesting, which was about when you were like 17 years old, and you found these broken bikes and you fixed them and then they became yours. And then you sort of built this big posse of riders. And it's almost like you got to rediscover the sport when you're older, right? When you're a kid, everybody has a bike.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, it seems like some kids, teens just sort of forget about it and then maybe come back to it, maybe through the way Evan, you did of getting your own or something.
Absolutely.
And you're trying to do that with your institute as well. But it's interesting that that has to happen.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that you mentioned that. You know, that happened to me. You know, I was really into bikes when I was a small kid. You know, I rode them all the time with my friends. And then, you know, I think as you get older, you start to think about, you know, upgrading your responsibilities, you know, getting a car and,
right. And
you know, driving to work and stuff like that. But I think there's something to be said for not driving your car to work and mm-hmm. taking the bicycle if you have the opportunity. And you know, taking your time and, you know, feeling the wind in your face and kind of taking it slow and easy and, you know, doing recreational rides that happen all over the city, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a few times a week, so.
Absolutely. That's such a good place to stop this show, which is a very bike positive show. And,
yeah.
And you know, I'm ready to get out there and get back on my bike and ride some more. Thanks a lot for coming in, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
Scott Menzies is the founder of the Sitting a Bike Institute. Find out more about their stuff on our website at outdoorexplorer.org. Sounds like a great stuff they're doing. It's exciting to have a new organization like that in town. In the first half, we talked with Lael Wilcox, who has founded Anchorage Grit, which is teaching middle school girls to do some heavy-duty bike riding. And thanks for being with us. Eric Bork is our producer. Hannah Duro is our assistant producer. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.